All right, see what we're working with here. So far, so good. Manuel Smith's When I Say No, I Feel Guilty. We're on chapter 2. You guys are going to really enjoy this part. Violating people's assertive rights. There we go. Welcome, everybody. Thanks for joining in. What's up, YouTube? Rah! Anyways, I'm just going to get straight into it now. Chapter 2, like I said, if you guys haven't seen it before, go back. Episode 1, definitely a good watch. It builds on Robert Glover's No More Mr. Nice Guy, which we went through before this. There's 9 episodes, 1 episode per chapter. The idea is, and I should preface now, this isn't a replacement for actually reading the books. This is more of an augment to it, because for a lot of people, they kind of had to go through it once, twice, sometimes 3 times in order to fully understand the concepts we're getting across here. So what this will do is hopefully save you the trouble of having to read it a second and a third time. But like I said, I skim through a lot of the examples they use on how they articulate the points, or a lot of the stuff that really resonates with people here. So I want to make it clear now. Starting on this one, he gets through the idea of how it ends up being non-assertive, like how people end up not pursuing their own assertiveness, essentially. So in situations, and he uses an example at the beginning where somebody has to go drive his mom to the airport. He wants you to do it, and he guilts you into doing it, and you feel really bad about it, but you also hate doing it. So in situations like this, all of us feel like saying, when I say no, I feel guilty, but if I say yes, I'll hate myself. When you say this to yourself, your real desire is in conflict with your childhood training and find yourself without cues. Cues that would prompt you in coping with this conflict. So when you say, if I say no, will my friend feel hurt or rejected? Will he not like me anymore? Will he think I'm self-centered or at least not very nice? If I don't do it, am I an uncaring son of a bitch? And if I say yes, how come I'm always doing these things? Am I a pussy, or is it the price I have to pay to live with other people? And these internal questions are triggered by an external conflict between ourselves and another person. We want to do one thing, and the other person wants to do another thing and manipulate us into doing something else. So to get to the point of that one, this is essentially like one of the strongest manipulative tools that... Now, were you looking at this from a relationship standpoint? But I mean, for single guys that are flirting with girls, going out on dates, it's perfectly applicable. But that ability to manipulate based on your feelings of guilt and insecurity are one of the prime ways that guys basically become simps. So it's the last thing you really want. And we're going to get into here about some of the ways it happens, as well as some of the underlying issues that cause it. And we're going to tie it into a bunch of other concepts we've already discussed on our channel. You're going to love it. I guess we're going to skip. Okay, so he does a bunch of anecdotes and stories moving forward. And it's always about, so going back to his example of the friend asking you to pick up his mom from the airport, it's about, in the farce of this manipulative, counter-manipulative interchange, is that who goes to the airport, you or Harry, does not depend on what you want, but whoever can make the other person feel guiltier. And this is where, like, STFU, or to shut up, is such a strong initial strategy for guys. Like, red-pilled guys, we're going through their relationship problems, sorting out a dead bedroom, any of that stuff. Because for the most part, people have these tools and they've been built on since childhood. A lot of it really resonates with the same nice guy paradigm that we had talked about before. And when you open your mouth, you can't help but use these tools again, because it's all you've really known. It doesn't really help. It doesn't get you the results that you want. You don't end up becoming more assertive. You just become passive aggressive. And it's not very attractive, as well as it's not very effective. So what you do generally is just shut up. Because while you may not say the right thing, you're definitely not going to say dumb stuff like this. So anyways, he talks about this stuff builds up, like resentment, frustration, all kinds of bad feelings. We'll throw a container word in there and call it a simp and leave it at that. So as in a first step of becoming assertive, you have to realize that nobody can manipulate your emotions or behavior if you do not allow it to happen. This is probably one of the keys, and if you've been around this space or one of the other people that are brand influencers in this space, whatever you want to call them, you're going to see a commonality. this piece of wisdom here usually put into a pithy statement. You are your only judge. You have to act without shame or guilt. And there's some truth to it. So we're going to take a step back now. And it's a, again, I quote The Last Psychiatrist a lot in this, but there's a lot of other sources I could. I just put this one in the description. I thought it'd be nice. It'd be a good reference to use, but feel free to look into other ones. So thanks to the boomer generation and the great generation before them that set those guys up for success, we end up with what he calls societal narcissism. Now, I'm not going to get into too much detail about that because that's going to veer off topic, but just for the sake of it, know that the narcissist doesn't feel guilt, only shame, which means by doing something, they don't actually have an internal barometer of what makes them feel bad. They only have external consequences. Now, if we want to talk about the modern thought apocalypse or dating with girls right now, is that girls have developed higher senses of narcissism than they've had in the past previously. Part of this is like the you go girl thing. Everybody's basically coddling women to the point of absurdity. And you can't help but have somebody eventually build this inflated sense of self-worth and grandiosity that comes with narcissism. So knowing this, you come kind of makes sense when you start seeing a lot of girls attacking shame. Oh, you can't fat shame girls. Oh, you can't shame her. You can't shame this. You can't shame that, because shame is the only thing that they know anymore. Guilt is an internal barometer that does not exist. And if actually, I guess we can go into that one. So one of the good reasons for this is that everybody has had this whole liberation and progressive push towards all sorts of things being normalized. I know this is going to be kind of a goofy example and it's going to veer into TradCon territory, but people used to be embarrassed about prawn. You know what I mean? Going to the hub. It used to be one of those things that was definitely embarrassing. You had to go to like, they used to have like houses, little film houses where you'd watch, you know, prawn videos and that. But it's been normalized to the point where not only are people not ashamed about watching it or don't feel guilty when they watch it, but there's like OnlyFans accounts going crazy. So right there is your biggest indicator that guilt no longer works. And so all of this, like women should act a certain way or attractive women do act this way, you're appealing to a sense of inner ethics that just doesn't exist anymore. And I don't know if it ever did. I just know it doesn't exist now. So I won't gonna go on to that. But back to the linked article there. So narcissists don't feel guilt, only shame. And since we are a generation of narcissists, we can't see other people's perspectives. So we extrapolate. We assume that nobody else feels guilt either. And that's probably accurate. So if guilt is gone, then there's no internal controls to a person's behavior, only external ones. The problem with being a nice guy or being a guy who's eventually hoodwinked and in a dead and dying relationship and a dead bedroom and that is that they tend to have the opposite problem of narcissism. They're missing it. In which case, guilt is a very effective tool. And while we can make the argument about what is the moral and the just way for a group or a society to organize itself, we got to look at this from a point of self-interest. In this case, we're doing what they call in game theory a tit-for-tat strategy. Because if you act with altruism or if you have guilt tempering your behaviors and the other person does not, they're eventually going to roll over you. So for, you know, for tit-for-tat, you got to play the game the way it's set up now and not the rules you've been given that may have been applicable 50 years ago, may not have, I don't even know. So the one thing negative I'll say about feminism, I mean, it's easy to do, but I try not to use that as the villain because I don't like the idea of making a 23-year-old thought who's a 5 out of 10 my arch nemesis. You really shouldn't either. But the one thing they're doing very well is having giant nagging PR campaigns basically de-shaming everything. And if soon as you let those reins off of human behavior, you're getting into a situation where people are on an even footing, except there's an innate bias towards women. So by making things equal, you're automatically pedestalizing women, which does not work. So we got past that point. And we talk here about childish assumptions. Well, that's weird. childish assumptions in this thing, and this delves into a bit of a different thing, but I'll kind of briefly touch on it here. It's a concept called transactional analysis, or the parent adult child. What this means is usually the tools we've developed and been trained with in our childhood end up becoming further used in adulthood, which causes all kinds of issues. In this case, the child and the parent, the idea of a child is you can actually remember your past. You remember the things you were done when you were raised, but a child doesn't have the cognitive functions to be able to articulate it. So when we talk about the child framework, that tends to be, how did something make you feel? When your mom called you a bad boy and good boys do this and your dad is a dick, like all the promise keeper stuff you've probably seen Rational Male, Rollo Tomasi talk about a lot. What we're talking about is the child mental framework. Guilt, shame, all apply to that stuff because you treat the other person as the authority figure and you treat them as their source of validation. So naturally, guilt applies when you think you're going to be having that sense of abandonment coming into it. So what does this mean practically? That, yeah, you think as a child, you're going to act as a child, and your feelings are basically leading your decisions. And not even current feelings, the feelings you used to have in similar scenarios with different people. The parent one is how it's not actually being a parent. It's from the childhood perspective, like how do you see the parents acting and like how do you work out the magic there? I'll use an example for this. Let's say your dad says, no watching TV, it rots your brain. And you don't watch TV, but then that weekend he's busy and he goes, look, I'm busy. Just go watch some TV. I got some work to do. Now, from the adult perspective, you don't learn that TV is sometimes good and TV is sometimes bad. You learn that whoever has the most power in the scenario gets to make the rules. So this is why like the parent and the child are very manipulative and kind of detrimental ways of looking at things. Adult, which is funny because once you look into it, and there's a great book for it, we might get into it later. It's like I'm okay, you're okay, as it's called. But you start to find the adult way of looking at things pretty much mirrors the way most guys have told you about the red pill, swapping notes, watch the world objectively as it is, and then act according to your own best interests, which is essentially the child or the adult. So it's kind of neat. In a way, you could almost say that this red pilling of society is growing boys into men. Like from a psychological standpoint, I'm not saying I'm going to take you out hucking wood. And it leads to all kinds of obfuscation. So the thing about non-assertiveness is it always comes up with very shielded emotions. So many people are afraid to show their true feelings of love and closeness because they think they may be trod upon and have no way to cope with rejection. And in this case, this is exactly what happens. If your wife nags you into doing more dishes and then still not having sex with you, what they're doing is they're using guilt to attach to your feelings or your fear of abandonment. And it's not like a conscious thing. It's not like you're constantly running around with daddy issues, but you have to admit this stuff does have an effect during your formative years. The fact that we have so much more divorce and a lot less men in the house, a lot more women in the house, a lot more women teaching in that, it only stands to reason that you're given a sort of delayed adolescence because you're basically being raised as a defective woman. And this leads to what he calls it the Bill of Assertive Rights, which, you know, it's a cute name. I guess it's not as cool as the Iron Rules, but we are where we are. So assertive right one. You have the right to judge your own behavior, thoughts, and emotions, and to take the responsibility for their initiation and consequences upon yourself. Period. You are your own judge. You know actions, you know consequences. That's a nicer way of saying, don't feel guilt, only shame. Is it narcissistic? Yes. Is it unhealthily so? Arguably not. At the very least, your life gets significantly better once you start adopting these mindsets. And there's tons of guys, I'm sure in the chat, will be telling you right now exactly why and how that happened. As much as we use narcissism as a pejorative, just realize in the back of your mind that narcissism is essentially a disorder that describes extreme masculine quality in the same way that borderline personality disorder does the extreme for extreme female. Now, women are obviously becoming more masculinized. That's the increase in narcissism. That's the increase in all kinds of behaviors. I think we can take this one as like valid for now. If your own personal experience doesn't reflect this, well, then I don't know what to tell you because I've got 10,000 examples of where it does. So in this case, it's almost an arms race where somebody has to be the most masculine one in any engagement or any relationship or any dating situation. And if you don't take it, she will. And girls have had better tools right now, so we've reached an arms race where guys have to step up. Otherwise, you're just not going to get any, and the little you do get is probably going to be starfish, duty sex, and attached to all kinds of stipulations. So if you want your love life successful, sometimes you just have to do what you have to do. I'm going to blow your mind on the next part here. So the next part is we're shifting gears. What are we on for time? The hell? Oh, good. We're still good. Preview window was set up, and I'm like, why is it still showing the intro video? I see you guys are super busy in chat right now. Like I said, I'm trying my best to glance over, but it's hard because I got a lot of notes to go over here, so I don't want to skip anything. Anyways, this part is going to explain in very articulate terms why that traditional conservative fantasy of men just being men and women being women and the old rules are the good rules and things shouldn't change is really more of closer to the realm of a psychological disorder than a worldview. The same concept of personal insecurity prompting us to invent rules and control behavior applies to others more than to other more significant things. What is the right way to have sex? How do you tell your mother to stop bugging your wife? What are the rules on how mothers and daughters-in-law should behave to each other? And how come your wife doesn't take care of this problem herself? Are only sons supposed to deal with mothers? And where did all these arbitrary ways of properly doing things come from? The answer is a simple one. We invent the rules as we go along. We invent the rules as we go along. Think about that. All this TradCon stuff, it's all invented. I'll use a great example of this. I always poke fun. I call it the Norman Rockwell fantasy. If you guys don't know, he was a painter, an artist, a graphic artist in like the 40s, 50s, 60s, I think even as far as the 70s. And he would paint all kinds of advertisements for cigarettes and the GI Bill and all kinds of craziness. He kind of popularized the idea of Americana when you think about that. So you see a lot of guys now talking about, this is the life I want. I just want a barbecue in my yard. And they'll show like a Norman Rockwell ad. This is going to get a bit like cerebral here. I really hate doing it to you, but you know, screw it. We use the Matrix reference with the red pill, black or blue pill thing all the time. So I figure might as well go into it. And I always pronounce his name wrong, but Baudrillard, that simulacra and simulacrum. He always talks about there being a matrix where you can't tell if you're in it or not. And the movie didn't quite get it right, because while there is a false world and a real world, you're either clearly in one or clearly in the other. A more accurate matrix is when you're seeing something that's a copy of something. In this case, the Norman Rockwell ads as a surrogate for 1950s traditional middle class life. And then liking it because you find it so authentic, because you have no frame of reference for it. That's technically what the matrix would be. And we're at a place right now where that nostalgia for a time that we never experienced is guiding people's behaviors. So it's essentially a matrix, if you think about it. I don't like talking on these terms too much, though, because it's like it's got the head up your ass feel to it. And it's really not helping now, because at the end of this, it's like, why won't my wife touch me? Why is my girlfriend wanting to just be friends? Why did she cheat on me? Like, these are the kind of substantive questions we're trying to answer. But you know, every now and then we got to get into it. Anyways. So that's the thing. And they're making these arbitrary rules as a buffer to prevent that insecurity from manifesting itself. Okay. So the answer is a simple one. If you invent the rules as we go along, using the beliefs taught to us in childhood as an outline, then we manipulatively use them with other people to control their behavior through violation of their assertive rights, and hereby relieve our feelings of personal insecurity about not knowing what to do and how to cope. Put a pin in that, because we're going to get back to that in a second. But when we act as if we're the ultimate judge of our own behavior, and someone's arbitrary rules must first be approved by us before we follow them, we will severely threaten this arbitrary structured order that non-assertive people use to cope with us. Consequently, the non-assertive person will be loath to grant other people any assertive rights and powers to influence their relationship with him. As a self-protective measure, he will psychologically manipulate you with rules and standards of right and wrong, fairness and reason and logic to control the behavior that is in conflict with his own personal wants, likes, and dislikes. Notice he added logic in there. And I think this will help because I've explained it a few times before where I say logic and ration aren't tools that human beings have developed to understand the objective world. They're actually tools, they're communication tools we've developed to persuade people to act one way or another. In this case, it's showing how they can be used as a manipulative technique to imply guilt, to get people to do more of what you want. Again, this is how a lot of guys fall for it. I have an article on my old blog. I think I've moved over to the new blog about different types of manipulation. There's essentially five broad categories. There's anger. If somebody gets mad, you're risk averse, so you tend to acquiesce. Girl starts yelling at you, you start doing what she wants. Hopefully she'll not abandon you because she's so angry, and then maybe you'll get some. You never do, but it basically scares guys straight. After anger comes crying. A girl will cry, will pick up on your empathic need to protect the woman, and you're very afraid that if you're making her this sad, she's going to abandon you, and so you do what you can to coddle her. Hopefully you'll get some in the process. Never works. What do we got here? Crying. Ego. Ego is the one where someone will appeal to your sense of innate nobility. Oh, you're such a big, strong man to do all this stuff for me. That's great. The white knighting thing essentially piles on with that one. Again, never works, but it taps into those guys' feelings that if they're the nice guy and they do everything that's expected of them, then they'll get a cookie. Never works. But the one here that's important is frame shifting. And this is where logic comes in. Most girls are very good at conversation. They've been doing it since they were 12. They're super social. Meanwhile, you've been sitting in your parents' basement when you were 15 till you're maybe 23 or however old you were, basically talking with people online, dropping F-bombs and N-bombs on the chat and Xbox Live. So you're really about 5 to 7 years behind the curve, which is fine. Some of you may not be, so this stuff may sound like, you know, old hat to you, but that's fine. This frame shifting thing is a way of making sense, making patterns, and allowing the other person to believe, like to change the way he thinks of things by having it make sense to him. People are big. We already mentioned it before where people are actually afraid when they don't have a strict set of rules. Like, how did it put it in there? There we go. Severely threatened his arbitrary structured order that non-assertive people use to cope with us. So if you're not an assertive person, what the problem is with logic and rationality is they provide that structure that gives the person the comfort in allowing himself to be manipulated. It really kind of makes you take a second look at logic and ration, doesn't it? And if it doesn't, it should. That's how they get you. So the tragedy of this manipulative coping is that the manipulator is unaware that the only justification he really needs to make a change in anything is the fact that he wants a change. He does not need external structure or arbitrary rules as a manipulative backup for what he wants. To negotiate his wants with you, all he needs to do is make a judgment that his likes and dislikes are sufficient justification for the effort he will expend in negotiation. Now, what does that mean in pleb terms? That means my way or the highway. And that's essentially it. So many guys attach arbitrary rules around things of behavior, but they're not agreed upon rules. They're covert contracts. Now, the dangerous thing about that is a lot of people have very similar ones. And the internet has only, you know, expanded upon this because everybody talks amongst each other. They build up each other's covert contracts and they all have kind of this mass delusion. Some examples I'll give you is the waiting before marriage to have sex thing. I mean, we're at a point right now that if you're even going to think about a relationship with a girl, you kind of need to know, like, that's a bare minimum. Everybody's out there, no guilt whatsoever about premarital sex. We can argue about it being right, or we can argue about it being wrong. I'm not here for that. I'm just saying it's a thing. It's here. And if you haven't even gotten that far, you don't have a relationship. And if you start treating it like one, you're basically giving somebody the ammunition to manipulate you. They'll use that as a threat point and as a weapon. And then they will get everything from you. And that's the whole point of like marriage beforehand. I mean, it used to be good because only guys could work on the farm. Only guys could work in the factory. You know, girls kind of need you financial support. That was their only lever to be able to secure commitment. It was like, yeah, no sex until that. Plus, I mean, medically it was more dangerous. So we can kind of see that. But all those barriers are gone right now. Women earn tons of money. They're good to go. They don't need you. It's actually a question from one of the Patreons I have. I'm probably going to deal with it this week, where he was asking, what did it mean to position yourself as a luxury good? Well, this is part of it. You got to stop treating yourself as a commodity. Part of it is definitely involving understanding. Now, Rollo calls it the old social, old order thinking. I would argue it's not even old order. I would say it's that matrix. It's what we think the old order stuff was like, because we're so detached from it, we don't even know what involved. And that's how we can end up with all kinds of inconsistencies. Like for guys, it's no, I'm saving myself for marriage. But it's actually, he has no idea how to approach women. He uses that as an arbitrary rule to hide his insecurity. Meanwhile, girls are like, yeah, that one didn't count. I'm still a good girl and I'm wearing white to the wedding. Same thing. Everybody's just developing all these kinds of buffers against their true feelings and their true wants and their true desires. And if you take nothing else from this series so far, take this first rule. Like, you're the judge of your own actions and you will suffer the consequences of them yourself. Like, that's it. And you're okay with it. And it forces good behavior, in the sense that if you take it upon yourself to understand, like, the consequences is my fault. I decided on action A, it had consequence B. Well, A was important to me, so whatever, I can live with that. It forces two things. It forces A, for you to start looking into the consequences of your actions more, because a lot of people don't. A lot of people just live by the seat of their pants. They make up stupid rules. That's where you get goofy things like the "Where have all the good men gone" meme, where it's a bunch of girls that at the tail end of "I wasted my 20s talking about now they want a man that they're 32 with three kids by five baby daddies and all that other nonsense. There's a male equivalent of it too. I'm 35. I've got a good job and I love my mom. And it's kind of the same thing. They're both equally unattractive and they're these weird arbitrary rules and virtues that don't exist. But you're like, you know what? Yeah, sleeping with that crazy girl, probably not the best idea. Or I need a slump buster. I'm going to go into it. And if she tries to stab you when you leave your house, well, that was the consequences and you accepted it. Best part of that, this is where I get into the second part. It allows you to stop sweating things so much. People are scared about everything. Oh my God, the super flu is out, I'm gonna die. Oh no, terrorists are this, and feminists are that, and everybody's so scared of everything. Hollywood's being me too, and I can't even recall what the latest outrage is over whatever. Oh, Epstein. Epstein didn't kill himself. The world's going to hell. But that's the thing. All this is based on fear, essentially. Everybody's so afraid of everything that all these consequences become dire straits. But once you start accepting consequences, there's no fear involved. Like, you opted in. And this is a very key point for a lot of guys. All these problems we talk about, they're opt-in problems. Marrying a single mom, opt-in problem. Dating a thought, opt-in problem. Sitting around sulking because there's no good girls anymore like grandmothers were, opt-in problem. All of these things are problems we create for ourselves. And since we create them for ourselves, we can uncreate them for ourselves too. And just simply live according to our own wants and desires, allowing the consequences of those decisions to manifest themselves, and then being okay with it because the juice was worth the squeeze. Figured I'd throw that little jab in there. So I see one of you guys asking about bosses on this. And this is actually good, because the next section he gets in is the three different types of gross categories of relationships that help you assert yourself. There's commercial or formal relationships, authority relationships, and equality relationships. They go in order of structure. So in this case, a commercial or formal relationship is like a boss and employee. An authority relationship is like a parent to a child, or a cop to a civilian, a cop to a citizen. And equality relationships, which is basically everything else. Da-da. He goes in through a couple other examples. He had a lot of examples in this one. I forgot. All right. So just know. So with an employee-employer example, there's the most structure there. The rules are known. Everybody knows how to play by the rules. So in the example there, how do you deal with a boss who's doing these guilting tactics? Well, then there's usually redress. I mean, the easy solution is you can just leave your job and go start another one. There's processes there. If your boss is giving you grief, you're allowed to say no. he's allowed to fire you, but you kind of knew that. And then that's the point. If he's guilting you into this stuff and you say no, you know the consequences. You're maybe losing your job, and you're okay with those consequences. I mean, why? Because you've taken steps to mitigate the damage. In this case, have your resume ready, go look for other jobs, have a strong network, all these things you can build. Now, let's say you don't have these things, and this is literally your only option for a job. You can take steps to kind of work on that problem, but in the meantime then, when your boss guilts you into doing something and you do it, you made it as a conscious choice, saying, okay, so for me, my wants and desires, I want to be in a position where I don't have to accept this stuff again. But in the meantime, I need 6 months to prep everything together. So you make the decision to acquiesce and allow yourself to be manipulated. Again, it becomes more tolerable because there's a light at the end of the tunnel. You're suffering now for future reward later. And this is kind of a very simplistic example. So I'm going to trust you guys to map it to your own personal lives. Second one is the authoritative, and that's like a cop to a guy getting pulled over for a speeding ticket. Now, there's some structure, but not as much. Like a lot of the times, actually, I'll use the military. It's a much better example. So the military always had like a catch-all term when it came to most of its policies and regulations, and that they could all be overridden for operational reasons. Operational reasons was basically saying the captain's word is law, regardless of what the policy says, and you can argue it in a grievance process afterwards. So while there was rules around, you could have arbitrary rules that the authority figure would give and you would have to follow. But at the same time, there's consequences attached. Do you want to disobey an order? Well, you can get a summary trial and these are the consequences. But if it is an illegal order and then he pushes you to do this stuff, you can file a grievance with it, you end up getting all this stuff wiped from your record, and it's sorted out. But the point is, there's structure to it, and so it helps mitigate your actions. This stuff, obviously not applicable to sexual dynamics. Sexual dynamics, and I think it's a bad choice of words he used, but he used, like, equality relationships. And all that means is there's no structure to it. Like, there is no governing rules to how you're supposed to date somebody. Does that mean you have to take her out for dinner? Does that mean a coffee date? None of it exists. It's all arbitrary and subjective. And that's why I love the PUA stuff. If you guys don't know, I had a history where I was in the military, and because I had such a hard time dating and keeping my work life balanced, I essentially learned pickup because that was the only way I was getting anything. And it created arbitrary rules for me. In this case, it was the mystery method, where there was three phases and each phase had three sub-phases. So 9 steps to go from meeting a girl to smashing. And it was all arbitrary because you learned that as you got good at this, you started to internalize a lot of the concepts. You could skip steps if you didn't need it. It was all based on the other person, how good your rapport is, that sort of thing. And it got to the point that it was training wheels and you no longer needed it. And you understood it was a fairly subjective roadmap. There were certain underlying things you had to understand. And then once you did, it worked. But that's the point. So when people, they used to sit there arguing whether their mystery method was better than real social dynamics, was better than love systems, was better than all those goofy things. And they were all fine because they all didn't matter. Like I said, it was all about the end goals. So back to this one. The thing most important about peer structures is to make sure you're treating your needs as sacrosanct and you're the only one judging your own behavior. Like, you have to act without shame, without ego, without any type of investment. It's strictly a value proposition. What is this person offering me that I'm not getting on my own? And is it more valuable than the consequences of having it? If you're dating a girl and she's wasting your time, if she's stringing you along, if she's sending 500 text messages, wants you to send stories home, does she want to do a video conference date? Like, are you sleeping with her? No. Then, yeah, this is not assertive rights. This is guilting you by that promise of poon down the line. Now, I would argue that's probably the one rule that you can kind of take as sacrosanct in these, like, peer engagements here. And it's that sex is so easy and destigmatized that if you're not getting it, that sends a stronger message than anything else somebody can send. Like, sex comes first, and then after that comes the relationship. You can argue whether it's right, but that's where it is. Good to you guys. All right. Yeah, then EM's bringing up here, where have all the good men gone is a gold mine. Honestly, I hate that trash. They're not wrong, but it's guys dwelling and just looking for cathartic reasons to blame other people for their horrible decisions. It's just, it's honestly, it's funny and it's amusing and it gets old very quickly. And you're just using it as escapism to hide from the own things that we can deal with generally. But I mean, then again, Jerry Springer was super popular because everybody loved watching white trash beat the shit out of each other over whose kid was whose and who did what. So that's chapter two. We're going to start on chapter three probably tomorrow. Just keep an eye on the channel. Again, hit like, hit subscribe, the notification icon, because I sometimes don't give a huge amount of notice on these things. Sometimes I have a good window of opportunity to get things done, and you maybe get an hour and a half notice. So if you want to miss these things, then definitely don't subscribe. Let me just make sure I didn't miss anything important in the chat. Ooh, I see here, Future MD1. Thank you, $20 super chat. Thanks, Ryan. I just came to grips with my relationships basically existing because I set myself on fire to keep others warm. Now I have to rebuild and cut off the dead wood. Cheers. Yeah, dude, no worries. It's what we're here for. Like, and that's the thing. Here's the thing. So that lighting yourself on fire to keep others warm, like we've been talking about it with the Glover stuff, tons. It's basically stemming from a fear of abandonment. And it's built on those, you know, childhood behaviors, those feelings you had because you don't have a frame of reference. Maybe your mom just went to work every day. But as a child, you don't understand that. To that, it looks like abandonment. And it sounds very subtle, but it slowly kind of builds a situation where a mom can use these manipulative, guilt-ridden tactics. And because the kid is so fearful of abandonment, he'll start behaving right. It's lazy parenting. It's very effective parenting, but it's very lazy. And this is the problem. It's one of those reasons why you kind of need like a man or a mentor in the house, because they tend to shed these from you faster, especially after your formative years when they can cause all kinds of damage. But for a lot of us, we just never had that benefit. Any man that would have been in our life that could have taught us different was scared out of the school system, was divorced by mom, and generally vilified by everybody around him. Because let's face it, during a divorce, the only one who's ever an ass is the guy, right? But that's the way it is. To wear the mask to protect others. Dude, I'm not going to lie. I would argue that since nobody's really doing any research on the efficacy of mask wearing, that that's essentially a nice guy behavior. It's a very guilt-ridden manipulative tactic, and it's doing the exact same thing you see in this other area here. It's just very sad that we're using like a worldwide pandemic to make this point, but it's so effective. Anyways, that's going to be it for this one. So I'll catch you guys in the next one. Don't forget, by the way, Fuck Files, it's in the description. Great book, 15 Lessons from a Decade of Women, at fine bookstores never. Links are bottom. I'll catch you guys on the next one. Let's do the D intro stuff. Pling.